Hello, and welcome to Unstuffing Our Story with me, Catrice Horsley. On today's show, I'm talking to Rebecca Hemmings, a woman who delights in life because, well, she knows the value of life as there was a threat to her life which she overcame. But enough of me telling her story. Let's listen to her in her own words as she begins to unstuff her story. So, it's my great pleasure to introduce and to welcome onto Unstuffing Our Story a woman who is like a dynamo of energy and delight and inspiration, Rebecca Hemmings. I am so happy that you agree to be on the show to share your inspiration, your wisdom and your knowledge with the listeners. So, how are you today?
I'm well, despite news that we're back in a really harsh tier three. I still feel fantastic because I found other ways of being free, but I can talk about that another time perhaps. But yeah, no, I'm good.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that because in Sweden we have no lockdown and it's all a bit surreal. Okay. It's really quite surreal.
Right.
And obviously a lot of my family are in Britain. I've got family in America, family in Australia, and it's so different. And they talk to me about how difficult it is. And I'm like, okay. Yeah,
sounds weird.
It's like, are you sure?
Yeah.
So it's very surreal.
Wow.
So I always ask the guests to start off by describing their journey to this point in their lives, almost as a story, what type of story it would be and what character you might play.
Mm-hmm.
I think we often experience people telling our stories for us when they haven't lived our story, which annoys me.
Yeah.
So I always like to give the guests the chance to share what they want and how they want their story to be heard.
Oh, that's a big old question.
It is a big question. Yeah.
It's definitely an overcoming adversity story. Mm. And I suppose if I was to tell it, I guess my audience, my preferred audience, I mean, I think everybody can learn something from everyone's journey, but I think I'd particularly want to speak to teenage girls because I think when I was younger, I just didn't see a way out. And I think sometimes you can't see beyond your own situation, particularly when you're young. And so I just want to inspire some young women to know that, you know, wherever you are right now does not at all mean that that's where you're going to be in like 5, 10, 15 years from now, or even next year.
Right. And when you say to find a way out, what was it that you were stuck in that you needed to get out of?
Well, I grew up in the inner city of Birmingham. I am the oldest of six children. My mum, for the most part, was a single mother. So, you know, money wasn't flowing. And, you know, we were around gang activity. That just means I witnessed stuff. When I was, I think, 14, my mum's partner at the time, he was shot in the club, died. And so, yeah, you kind of grow up thinking like, wow, I'm always going to be around violence. I'm always going to be around poverty. I'm always going to be like nothing. All that great stuff I see on TV, all that great stuff I see on The Cosby Show, or I see on, I used to love Dynasty, that life that I wanted. Like,
I was so Joan Collins.
Yeah. I mean, the shoulder pads, everything I wanted at all, like, all of that just seemed like so far away. And I just felt like, oh my gosh, it just seemed like a trap. And I just really felt, like I lacked freedom. What was funny is that once I discovered theatre, that was my way out, really. Once I discovered theatre, I learned that actually, no, there are so many different options. Number one, I could come out of who I was. I was a very shy child and I could be someone else. So I could kind of protect me, but I could be free by being somebody else. And that, I mean, just being able to communicate a version of me and express a version of me that I hadn't been able to do before was so freeing. And it opened up a lot of doors to me. So I went to university. I started my own company, theatre company, at the age of 21. I went to go and travel to Canada and live there for like 18 months. So it's like all of a sudden, because I discovered this one thing I was really good at, my life had completely changed, and I was free.
Yeah, I've got the biggest smile on my face listening to you. It's like it's gone twice around my head. It's just because in some ways it's a similarity, because for me it was stories. It wasn't theatre. Yes. It was stories. Yeah. And that enabled me to try on different identities and imagine different versions of myself. Yes. And I do think certly in Britain and perhaps here in Sweden as well, that there isn't as much emphasis on the arts and funding certainly for the arts as there should be, because they are what enable us to imagine ourselves as something else.
You know, I've just spent the last 2 years working within the world of criminal justice and the arts, and there's so many examples of people who have, you know, turned their lives around despite having been in the criminal justice system through the arts, which is fantastic.
And it's so non-threatening.
Yeah.
I was talking to another guest about quite often when you are involved in arts and you, whether you're painting or photography or theatre, and you almost live out your life or have a version of your life that you're going through, that you're representing, whether it's dance or whatever, but you're representing your emotional journey in your life. It gives you almost a space between being overcome by your life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Or having a distance between you and your experience.
Yeah.
And that space, that distance, enables you to actually get closer to the experience.
Oh, wow. That's deep. Because you see it from a different perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what arts provide. They give us a distance in between us and our experience so we can actually get nearer to our experience.
I completely agree. And I think because a lot of people don't necessarily deal with adversity well, because they're too close to it, it's too painful, so therefore it's easier to distract it away or just not deal with it full stop. But I think you're absolutely right, by having a mechanism to kind of see it from a distance, to see the forest for the trees, if you like, does offer a way in that's safe enough.
I was wondering, you saying that you've been brought up in that environment and that there was this kind of feeling of being stuck. Mm. Was there ever a point in that experience, in that life that you had then, where you felt it wasn't your life, that it was being, like you had no agency or power in your life? It was all being decided for you.
Gosh, I think I always felt that way. Gosh, that's interesting, actually, because I don't think I saw my life in any other way. It was just that these are the circumstances that I've been born into, and this is just the way things are up until the point where, you know, I broke free. I didn't see a way out, because everybody around me was also stuck in some way, shape or form.
I was brought up in the north of Birmingham in one of the most racist council estates. You know, it was known for the racism. It was absolutely horrific. There was a time when the Asian taxi drivers had a curfew. They wouldn't come into the area after a certain time because there'd been so many attacks. Really, really, really bad. But I can always remember seeing people who looked like me doing amazing things. I mean, the queen, the princesses. And I'm wondering, did that make a difference to you with regards to representation, you being black? Could you see people? I mean, there was the Cosby Show, did you get what I mean?
another reason why theatre was fantastic for me is because I was heavily influenced by two wonderful women who ran a theatre company, Sharon and Maggie. They ran Sister Tree. And
amazing singers.
Oh my gosh, singers, actors, performers in general, just brilliant people who were just vibrant, energetic. They were living life on their own terms, and they were running their own theatre and education company. And I just thought, oh my gosh, that's what I want to do.
And they
gave me that confidence, because they did it.
They put the foot in feisty.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, you wouldn't knock them down. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. You knew they were in the, you knew they were in like the city. Yes. You, it wasn't just in
yeah,
the
exactly.
room. Yeah. Okay. This is, it's interesting because one of the questions I ask is, in your quest to become who you are now, who were your helpers along the way and what gifts did they give you? And were there any kind of demons or beasts that you had to conquer or befriend? You know, did you have to make tame something that had been a challenge to you? And it sounds like those two would have been helpers and they would have given you the gift of seeing yourself doing something.
Yeah. Without a doubt. You know? To this day, actually, if I can say, it's no surprise to many people who know me that I had cancer and I had breast cancer. And when that did happen, Maggie, who I hadn't communicated with for years, I think, she actually took over my business so I could get through the surgery. Like, even thinking about it now, I'm just like, it was such a selfless thing to do. It was such a huge thing to do. And we didn't have, no, we hadn't, as I said, we hadn't had that communication for a long time. So for her to just come out the blue and say, look, Becky, I'll do this for you. It was, and I needed it. It was a time when I really, really needed the help. Just blew me away. Just blew me away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, let's have a moment for those two women. Yeah. It's when you're at your most vulnerable that sometimes you can clam up in a way, but that stops you being grateful for when people step forward. And thank goodness that she did. So if you want to talk about the breast cancer, you can, but that might not be the thing that defines you. It's interesting how people might choose to define us through certain things that happened in our lives.
Yeah.
And you might go, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that wasn't like the biggest defining moment.
Definitely responsible for who I am right now. Like, you know, nobody wants anything like that to take place in their lives. But I am grateful for the experience because it's made me see the world in a whole different way and experience the world in a far better way. I'm far more appreciative of just the little things. You asked about demons and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I've been able to get those out of my life. Great. In that respect, you know.
Because in that way, you know, if you think of that question, who were your helpers and what demons do you have to battle, then certainly cancer would have been a goddamn demon.
Oh, it's huge. You know, you can't even imagine what that was like.
I remember actually, Becky, I remember you doing that video when you found out and how incredibly courageously vulnerable you are and were doing that. You were so open.
You know, it was a way of dealing with it. And what was in the fore of my mind, two things. One, I was around a lot of people who either had cancer or had died from cancer recently, and I just wanted to warn people because I felt like a lot of people were missing the signs. And the second thing was, like, I know a lot of people, I suppose it didn't cross my mind that I could have just been quiet and not said anything, but because I'm around so many people, I just thought, like, there's no way they're not going to find out that, you know, I'm gonna have to have this surgery, or you know, I might even die or whatever. Like, you know, I might not be myself for a while, so I just need to kind of get it out there, even to family that didn't know. I told most of my family, but they didn't all know. So I just thought, let me just get it out one time, and they can deal with it. I've got it out of my system. I don't have to have 10 million conversations about it, and I don't regret it. I'm so glad. I'm so glad I did that because it had the desired effect.
But I tell you what that did as well, certainly for me, when I watched it, I mean, certainly made me more aware. And you were posting stuff about like different stuff that can happen to your breast that you might not even think can be a sign of breast cancer. So you informed and helped, but also you owned it. You know, in making that decision, it was like, I am I'm the one who's telling you.
Yeah.
You're not going to find out because there's some kind of shame or something attached to this. You owned that situation. Yeah. And that showed bloody strength and courage. It really did.
Yeah, I remember people saying that to me at the time, and I didn't feel that way. It just felt like the right thing to do. I mean, I've now gone on to learn a lot more about, you know, owning your vulnerability. I love Dr. Brown. So I'm totally all for that now. But I wasn't even aware of that. Yeah. I was, but I wasn't thinking about that at the time. It was just purely just kind of offload this, and then it will give me room to deal with it. And then that's what it did.
Mm. I had a lung surgery. It wasn't cancer. They thought it might have been, but it wasn't. But I didn't know when I went into the surgery what I would wake up to, whether I would be missing a complete lung, whether I'd be missing part of a lung, whether it would be, you know, whatever. And I remember people saying to me, don't tell anybody because people won't employ you for work and they'll think you're not able and all of this. And I thought, if I don't, there's just going to be whispers. Because it's in the silences that people build up the biggest lies.
Yes, you know,
it's in the lack of information that they build up the biggest lies. So I did say, you know, this is what's happening. As it was, they only took a small part of my lung and it wasn't cancer. And it's fine, actually. I'm much healthier after the surgery than I ever was before. I wanted to own it. I wanted to say it because I just felt that if I didn't, in what I said at the start of this conversation, somebody will be telling my story for me, and they're not living my life.
Yeah, you're right. And it's the first time I've looked at it in that way. But you're right. I can imagine if I didn't say anything, and you know, I was off the scene for a bit, there'd be so many different rumors, and
So. If I'm thinking in terms of stories and people's stories, when I think of you, it's almost like you've got all of these different branches, like a trilogy, because there's like your personal story and you setting up the theatre company. Mm. There's the story of your involvement with Zumba and health and fitness and your glow up, which you have to talk about.
Yes.
And also there is the work that you do with Strawberry Words with regards to anti-racism work and people becoming more aware of white privilege and how it impacts in workplaces, etc.
Yeah.
And the systemic impact of racism.
Yes.
So you seriously have got a lot of books. You've written a lot of books in your life.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think what it is that for the first time ever, I'm honoring myself and I'm allowing myself to go with my passions.
Mm.
And I think I know that in the past I've denied myself that. And it's working for me. It's working. And I think because in the past I thought I had to follow a certain route. Okay, I was always self-employed and that was different in itself. But I felt that as though, you know, you pick one subject, you pick one career path and you go down that path and you let it grow and that's. But, you know, for instance, when I started the fitness stuff, I loved it. And I was, you know, at one point I was only doing like teaching Zumba and teaching dance fitness, but my brain was suffering.
The muscles were developing beautifully. Yeah. Your brain was going, where's my workout?
Exactly. I just was so not stimulated. I just needed more stimulation. And so it's through the work with Strawberry Words. You know, I've always done training. I mean, it started with the theatre and education work, and it grew into initially what was known as cultural awareness training for teachers, and now it's more anti-racism work. So that was what kind of, because it fed my curiosity as to who I am, what my identity is, and why life has been a certain way for someone like me. Like I just wanted to learn more, and still I enjoy learning about it. And now I feel I'm getting to a point where I'm like, okay, this is all making sense and you all need to know about it. you know.
At some point you're older, it's like there's all of these connections between all of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's, I always say it's at those intersections of our work that the magic happens.
Yes.
So for me, it's at the intersection of my background in, I used to do all the play training in Birmingham,
yes,
play work training,
yes,
and the intersection of that with story and the intersection of that with performance. And that intersection, that's like, wow.
Yeah.
Because we are so unique in our experiences.
Absolutely.
And when we gather them all together into that spot of expertiseism, that is pretty incredible. And you have got a lot of strands intersecting.
And now it's making sense. Whereas before, especially with Strawberry Words, I always wanted to include like an element of personal development, and as well as, you know, the fitness stuff, as well as the training, but it just didn't make sense. I couldn't. Whereas now, actually, the stuff I do with Time to Glow Up comes under Strawberry Words, albeit it's its own little department, but it's still the whole idea of developing people. And that's what I do. Essentially, I help to develop people.
Yeah. Come on, tell us about the glow up.
So
tell us about this amazing chapter in your book.
Oh, isn't it amazing? It is great. And as I say, it did grow from my cancer experience. So, you know, I had my surgery. So I had a mastectomy on the one side, I had reconstructive surgery. And, you know, in terms of like physically, that was all done and dusted and I was recovering. So I think for the outside world, it seemed as though, it's all over. We need to get back to normal.
Gosh. But that's when the journey starts, isn't it?
It really was.
It's the sense making.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. You know, I think I didn't acknowledge that I actually had cancer until after the first year. And so for the first 18 months, I was in I call it a depression. The doctor said it was anxiety by her definition, but I was really sad. That's all I know. I was sad. I was unmotivated. For the first time in my life, I didn't know what direction my life was going to go in. And I just felt like no one understood. I didn't want to be around with other people who'd been through cancer because I didn't want to be sad, but I was sad. So it's just like,
I think we underestimate how much grieving we need.
Yeah.
You know, there's that saying, for all change, there is loss.
Yeah.
And change in your health, change in how you saw yourself, change in how you could depend on your body, and then it goes and messes everything up.
Yeah.
You have to grieve.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to grieve big time.
Yeah, I had to grieve who I was because I knew I was changing. I was very afraid that I'd be known as that girl with cancer, the girl that had cancer, the one who made that video. I didn't want to be known. You know, all this stuff was going on in my head. Anyway, so I decided I was going to go to a breast cancer weekend. I thought I need to do something. I'm sick and tired of feeling this way. I went and there was this woman, you know, we've all either had breast cancer or were going through it. And this one woman, she was just so vibrant and energetic and lovely and positive. And I just went up to her and I said, "What is this? Because whatever this is, I need this." And she's ever so lovely. And I think she's from Liverpool. And she goes, "It's the meditation."
God bless her.
Meditation. And she told me about this particular program. It was an 8-week program where you meditated for about 10 minutes twice a day. And, you know, it's all academically researched. And that they guarantee you by the end of this program, you're going to feel happy. You're going to feel amazing. You're going to feel connected. And I just thought, look, I've seen this woman. I like the fact that this is all based on research. I have to do this for myself.
Yeah.
But you see, by the seventh week, I was flying. I was, oh my gosh. That's where the glow up really began, because that's when I really wanted to start to take care of how I felt. So that then turned into looking at how I looked. I wanted to get my nails done. I wanted to do my makeup. I wanted to attend empowerment sessions. I met someone amazing and I can't go into too much detail. My daughter's around, but you know, everything was just like on the up, and it's continued that way. Even through this pandemic, I'm still on that journey. Every day I'm discovering new things, but it's all about really becoming in tune with who I am and honoring myself.
And not turning any part of yourself away.
No,
you know, welcoming all aspects of you know, who you are, what you can do. And even, you know, lots of people would have not welcomed the breast cancer.
Yeah.
But you said like a couple of sentences ago, you're grateful
yeah.
for it making you become more grateful yeah. For those everyday things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, gosh, that's, and what I love about what you're saying, and you're involved, as I say, you're involved in the arts, you're involved in development, personal development, you're involved in the anti-racism work, mm. you're involved in health and fitness. And there's so much that we're finding out now with regards to how brain chemicals are, the hormones are released mm. when we exercise, yes. which means that we can de-stress, yep. which means we have less cortisol, yep. which means we have more dopamine,
right.
which means we have more serotonin,
right. yep.
which means that our bloody telomeres, which are those little things mm. on the ends of our, what are they on the end of? They're DNA, they're part of that, mm. On the end of our chromosomes. Mm. They're like little shoelaces. Mm. And if you're suffering from toxic stress, mm. then they shorten.
Yes.
And if you can give yourself those dopamine and serotonin hits, they lengthen.
Yeah.
And they are bloody well responsible.
Yes.
For our longevity, how long we live, and our health,
yeah.
how our body fights off disease.
Yes.
So everything you're doing is all linked into now
yes.
and fundamentally known and researched.
Yes.
None of that can exist separate to any of the rest of it.
Exactly, exactly.
And you can't exist separate to any of the stuff you do.
No, it's amazing.
I love it. You're like yeah. a living testament to bloody research.
I like the way you weave that together. No, it's absolutely.
Seriously, you're right in that it's those intersections, baby.
It's very conscious of stress. You know, because, you know, before I got diagnosed, I was very stressed, you know, particularly with my business. I was just doing too much work. And so now I'm very, obviously, I don't want to get cancer again. And, you know, I'm 3 years out of it. And, you know, if you're going to get it again, you're more likely to get it in the first 5 years. And so
right.
I'm very conscious that I don't ever want to be in that position again. So I've changed everything. I don't eat meat anymore. I exercise at least four times, but I always aim for five times a week. I stay away from negative environments as much as possible. And yeah, I treat myself well. And all of that I know is to keep that cortisol at bay. You know,
yeah.
I can't
yeah.
do it to myself anymore. It's not worth it. It's not worth trying to be that strong woman to endure whatever it might be, just to say, you know, why do we do that? So I don't do that anymore. And it's so freeing.
And I know that in going on that journey and in living this amazing story, you're opening up all the pages of it so that other people can be part of it with you.
Yes.
And I know that you were doing some incredible stuff around food that wouldn't quite often be, excuse me, I'm going to cough, food that would quite often be, I don't know, like a deep fried unhealthy kind of stuff. And you were coming up with versions that were vegan, that were plant-based, that were like jackfruit.
Yeah.
I think
yes.
you had the one day or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because you're educating a whole group of people who might want to eat, you know, the deep fat, delicious kind of, but saying actually this is important for your health and you can still have all the taste and flavor.
Yeah, because I'm very much on that journey. I'm trying to take my daughter on that journey and I've got to keep learning, you know, and this is, you know, what's been very eye-opening is the amount of wonderful flavorful food that isn't animal based, that isn't from an animal.
Yeah,
there's so much. I mean, even in baking a cake, you know, the cake's not that healthy, but if I want to treat myself and have a cake, I don't have to put egg in there, I don't have to put dairy in there.
No.
Applesauce is amazing, and you know, so we're told all these things like we have to have cake to, you know, sorry, egg to bind a cake, for instance, and you know, it's all this stuff that does, it's not true. You know?
No.
So it's a whole on learning.
I love the fact that you're saying this because for so much of what I'm involved with, it's not just about creating your own story. Mm. It's about identifying the stories that you live in. And we are told a load of lies. You know, we are told all of these different cultural stories, different health stories, and a lot of the stories are told to us by the people who are being funded to sell us stuff. That's you know, that kind of thing is happening the whole time. So it's on many, many different levels. And I think there's also something to do with you can't really be part of another person's story or even start to understand another person's story unless you have deconstructed your own. You know, unless I know why I feel the way I feel about a certain thing, where did that come from? You know, and a lot of that stuff is uncomfortable. You'll know this doing the anti-racism work. You know, white people talking about racism. Uncomfortable stuff. But unless you know where that came from, then you can't then make the decision to not believe that anymore, or you make the conscious decision to do something.
There's no language to discuss it. There's no nuance. There's just what you know and what you don't know, and you know, and we will leave all the stuff we're uncomfortable about, and you know, then there is no discussion.
Right. I do know there's a question here, and you have so answered it in everything that you've done. Because one of the questions is, what does your work or your art form or whatever provide you with? And as you are talking, it is like I can just hear champagne corks popping.
Well, I no longer drink alcohol, but yes, if I did. it's freedom.
You delight and free. Yeah, freedom. Yeah.
Freedom.
And freedom to be
me, to unapologetically be me. And I know that's a bit of a cliche, but it's true. Like, I don't like, I totally embrace who I am now, and if you're not with it, then see you later. Like, it's okay. You don't have to agree with me,
but it's almost like but you open up so much of yourself. You know, it's not like you dismiss. It's like you're inviting people. You know, this 100 squats a day. Bloody bonkers, you are, I tell you.
We're nearly doing
100 squats a day. Yeah. So you invite people on parts of your journey with you so that they can also feel as emboldened and empowered as you manifest, womanifest. Let's use womanifest.
That, yes.
Yeah, we won't manifest anything. We'll womanifest some stuff here. So, having lived the life that you have, met the helpers that you did, and conquered the demons, what advice would you give to other people who are going through lives where they can't see a way out, or lives where they're feeling they're on a battleground and they might lose?
I think the biggest piece of advice that was given to me was, again, once I was started to realize that, oh my gosh, something just happened in my life, which was a cancer. It was a psychologist that said to me that I went to her and I said, I feel anxious regularly, and I don't know what to do with this feeling. And I knew that when I felt anxious, I would do things like just swipe on my phone for like hours. Like, literally, I would be in my bed and I'm swiping through Facebook or Instagram. And what she said was, in those moments, put down the phone or whatever it is you're doing to distract yourself, stop doing that, and just ask yourself, what is it I'm feeling? Or just, she said, just notice it. And if you don't even have an answer, it's okay, but just notice that feeling, because that feeling is trying to come through you, and you're not letting it. And this is what builds up and makes you anxious. And so I started to do that. I remember one morning I woke up and I felt this feeling and I started to cry. And it was one of the first times I'd cried, like, after, you know, getting diagnosed. And then I was really sad and I went back to sleep. It was a time my daughter was, you know, she was, I think, nans or something. And I woke up again and started to cry again. And that whole morning, all I did was get up, cry, go back to sleep. And it was, you know, it wasn't the end of my grief, but it was a lot, you know, I got a massive amount of release and relief. And so what I say to people is allow yourself to feel, and it's a brave thing to do. It's a hard thing to do, because I felt some pain that I didn't know that you could experience, like that emotional pain. It hurts, but you're not going to die from that pain. And that is actually the way through it, is to feel it. And so that's, I think people have to start there.
Oh God, I love what you've just said. I absolutely love it, because I think we are so scared and we just run away, and it's still there and it's still there. I have what I call sad days, and I'll literally go to bed and I will cry and I'll sob in bed, And it's everything's so overwhelming. COVID is overwhelming. I can't see my daughter. I have no work in Sweden. How am I going to sustain? And I'll actually allow all of that to just flood over me. And then, like, the dog will jump on the bed and hit my face. And it's like, okay, now, okay, fine, that's it. Because it takes so much energy to contain and ignore those feelings. So I love that you've said that. I love that you said that. Do you still get overwhelmed?
I haven't for a long time. Sometimes. I haven't for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the other day I had a sad day. And again, it was due to this whole COVID situation. But I know now, just to allow, just like you did, just to allow myself that time. Like, I will give myself literally a day, like you do. And allow myself to be sad. And then I know that I've let it through. And so the next day, I'm back to be me again. And so, you know, and that's the beauty of all of this is that I now know that I have the tools. Like, whatever happens, you know, life will be life. Stuff is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I now have better tools to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're sharing those tools. Yeah. And I love you for that. Love you. So how can people contact you, Rebecca, and what kind of stuff can you provide them with to make them see their lives as something that they can take agency over?
Okay, well, firstly, we'll start with the bigger picture stuff, which is the work I did with Strawberry Words. So I do a lot of work, as you mentioned, around anti-racism, around looking at how to make the world better for racially marginalized people. If organizations, I'm currently working with organizations nationally and internationally who are wanting to have that conversation with their staff and to just change things, change the culture of the organization. So that's through strawberrywords.co.uk. And then there's some really exciting stuff coming up with Time to Glow. I became a qualified personal trainer this year. And so, I haven't done it yet. I'm doing it this evening. I'm launching my online personal training program. But there'll also be some personal development work that's coming out, which people can be a part of. That's through Time to Glow Up. So that's timetoglowup.co.uk and also on Instagram, Time to Glow Up.
Right. Well, we are now coming up to the most exciting part of this interview. It is the quick fire questions.
Oh,
I'm so excited. I'm slightly in spasm. Okay, hold on. Right. So the first question is, what was your favorite story?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny. As soon as you said the word story, I knew what it was. And I don't know. Teeny Tiny and the... No, it's just come to me. Teeny Tiny and the Something Witch Woman...
Oh, do you know
the fence made of bones?
Yes.
That's the story.
Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga was the witch. I mean, I don't know whether she was called Baba Yaga in the book, but that's who the witch is.
I don't know, but that...
I had totally forgotten that book existed until you said it. I can almost see the little creature who's teeny tiny. Yeah, okay, brilliant. I want you to finish this question, this statement, sorry. Creating our own lived stories requires...
vulnerability.
I'm sending you a little hug there. What sustains you right now, Rebecca? What keeps you going? What sustains you?
My daughter.
Little hug heading her way. Are there any movies or books or series, documentaries that you would recommend to the listeners that you've watched and you've gone, whoo? It could just be a good thing.
I mean, Iyanla Van Zandt, Fix My Life. I healed through watching her program. She's all about healing. I definitely recommend watch stuff on YouTube whilst it's still there. But a great book I'm reading at the moment is Atomic Habits by James. Is it James Clear? Yes, James Clear. Fantastic book in terms of how to adopt habits. And to get lost in the process instead of just focusing on the goal. Amazing book.
Two recommendations. Okay, brilliant. What do you think, and this is the last question, what do you think is the most important story that we should be carrying right now?
The story of hope. It's not over until it's over. So... whatever that looks like, you know, it's different for everybody else, but the story has to have an element of hope, because it's through that that anything is possible.
That's it. It's the end of the interview, and I want to thank you so much, Rebecca. Thank you so, so, so much. Have a lovely, lovely evening. And you know, good
luck. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And well done for doing this. And thank you. It was lovely to connect with you.
It really, I tell you, I feel you filled my bucket.
Well, I'm
filled my bucket, lass. Yeah. With joy. Some people pull the plug. Some people have filled the bucket. Oh. You filled my bucket. I'm going to go away with a huge smile on my face.
You too.
You take
care.
Okay,
bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's it for this year, in actual fact, on Unstuffing Our Story. And I will be here again next year on January the 8th. But until then, please take a look at our Instagram page, Unstuffing Our Story. And please subscribe to the podcast so you know when the next one's coming up. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday period. Bye-bye for now.